My name is Ray McKeever, and this is the fifth and last in a series on men's issues. Today, I'd like to have us look at men and power. And look at men and power and of power relationships between men and women. I haven't been in all the classes, but one of the classes that I heard, one of the reports that I heard from one of the classes was that one day you tried to design the ideal community or something like, what? You're going to finish doing that tomorrow, right?
Well,
oh, you're going to finish the community. Is that what you're doing? You're designing? You're suggesting ways it would look or something?
Yeah.
Is that the correct word to use, designing a community?
Designing
a community. And I thought about that. I think about that every time I come to this class. And how, if I had my way in a class, people would not sit in chairs. People would not sit separately. People would sit together. Chairs are not designed for sitting together. But in particular, in a class like this, where I think we're dealing with issues of estrangement between men and women, issues of estrangement between men and men, and acknowledging that those exist, making some analysis of those, and trying to find a way to change that kind of estrangement. I always think of that when I come to this class, what it would look like if all the men were sitting together holding each other, or if two men were sitting together touching each other and being close, and we were learning in an environment that in some ways contradicted the apartness that we feel. Sometimes when I've led workshops, I've started there, a two-day workshop, and get together with people and say, well, I know from experience that these kinds of things, that what happens is the last day, the last 10 minutes that you're together, you all form a circle and touch each other and hold and be close and affirm each other and acknowledge what's happened. What would it be like to begin the workshop that way and say, let's just not, of course, you can't force that kind of intimacy, you can't force that kind of togetherness, but you can acknowledge it, that it does exist. By definition, at least I see, that's where we are together. By definition, we do have some kind of a community of togetherness. In reality, we're apart. So I'd invite anybody that wants to do that. I'm sitting on the floor here, and if anybody wants to come and sit with me while we do this, that'd be really great for me. If anybody else wants to be close to somebody else while this session is going on, feel free. Probably have to get out of your chair to do that, but if you can find another way, that's fine too.
Move your guitar.
Oh yeah, great. All right. Thank you. Brings back memories of one time when I was at about a four-day workshop, and about the second day I started off, and all of a sudden I reached an understanding with someone where anytime we want to, we could just sort of, we held hands, and we go through a whole two-hour group session holding hands, and it's like it didn't, after a while it didn't detract, I wasn't thinking about them particularly, it just kind of freed me more to be in the group, so maybe I'll ask you for myself, support. Let's see. I'd like to just present an understanding, one understanding of men and power and of power relationships between men and women. Most of this is based on an article by a man named Joe Fleck. And so I'm just going to lay it out and then see where we go from there. Men's power over women, Plack breaks down into three different areas. The first area is men's power over women in relation to the power that men perceive women having over them. That feels real familiar to me, because anytime I start talking to a man about how we're the agents of oppression, or the ways in which women feel oppressed by us, that's one of the first responses I get. Yes, but, I feel oppressed by women. Women do things to me. It feels like they have power over me. So that's the first category. I'll name the three categories, and then I'll say a little bit about each one. The second one is men's power over women in the context of men's power relationships with other men. And according to Plek, and also I see it the same way, that it's a tougher area, because I think we can see a little more clearly the way imbalances in power and, you know, the distress and the pain that comes up around that between men and women. We can see that more clearly than we can between men and men. And the third area is men's power over women in the context of men's power in a larger society. I don't know if we'll get to that one or not, but seems like the first two are maybe more important for our discussion here right now. I'd like to sing a song here, which I didn't realize. I wrote this song several years ago. It's a song about me and my mother. And I didn't realize quite what was in the song. I always learn things after I put them into an artistic mode. A couple years later, I'll read something about a heavy analysis of something. I thought, gee, that's what I was talking about in this song. So I'm going to sing this song. It's called Mother, Don't Mother Me. And it's got a chorus that I invite you to sing along. The chorus is simply, Mother, don't mother me before you hear me call. Mother, don't mother me. I'm not your all in all. And the song is meant to illustrate a kind of a common theory, probably the most common theory, about how women have power over men and why, because of that, men feel like they have to compensate and have power over women, or restrict women, mainly by restricting women's roles in the society. Which I'll say more about after this song. It goes like this. Actually, I haven't sung this for a while, so I'm not sure I'm going to remember all the words. 3:15 and the school bells ring. We were free for another day. In the mad parade from the second grade, I made my homeward way. Up the stairs, I jumped them in pairs. The door slammed like a bomb. Once inside, I dropped my pride and I simply yelled for Mom. Mother, don't mother me before you hear me call. Mother, don't mother me. I'm not your all in all. I can't remember. I'm gonna make one up. She was always there, in foul or fair, whenever I would call. When my pants would rip, that's with a chocolate chip. When my pants would rip, or when I'd lose my basketball. She was given her what life as a mother and wife. She performed it with aplomb. The thin gold band on her rough chapped hand, how I'll remember Mom. Mother, don't mother me before you hear me call. Mother, don't mother me. I'm not your all in all. Six of us brothers was enough for two mothers, but she handled us all alone. Papa came home when the supper was on, but he never stayed for long. I wondered why she'd never cry, what with him being gone and all. As I felt her pain, I learned to see her gain in coming when I'd call. Mother, don't mother me, that's it, sing before you hear me call. Mother, don't mother me, I'm not your all in all. Well, I left home when I was full grown to give the wide world a whirl. The
never stopped slamming. Mom became a grandma when Billy bore our girl. Troubled life with my own good wife has helped me see more clear. Mother may be far away, but Mom is always near. Mother, don't bother me before you hear me call. Mother, don't bother me, I'm not your all in all.
Well, I think one of the reasons, actually what I did was I wrote that song and then I sang it one time and then I stopped singing it. And I think I realize now why it was scary for me to keep singing that song, because I think there's a lot of anger in the song. That's what it felt like to me. That something felt wrong at the time. And it feels like there's a lot of anger in the song, of kind of blaming women for difficulties that I've had in relationships with women in my own life. It was really helpful for me to read about this thing called the mother domination theory, about why women have power over men. And the theory very generally goes like this. Women basically dominate men as young boys. There are teachers, there are child rearers. So they have the most input into our lives at that time. And so basically when we grow older, when men grow older, we realize this. And in some ways, try to turn the tables on that. I'll get these things as clear as I want to. Does that make sense to people?
This theory came out of this book?
Out of Plex, yeah. Well, no, it didn't. No, he mentions that this is a very common theory. Oh. He's going to suggest another one here that's... It's interesting because it's kind of a vicious cycle, you see. I mean, men restrict women to child-rearing roles, staying-at-home roles. You don't see that many men, lower-grade teachers and so forth. So in a way, we deprive ourselves of male models when we're young. And then kind of growing up, trying to get rid of Mom the whole time, trying to get rid of the woman dominating in order to establish a masculine identity. Of course, one of the solutions to that, a simple solution to that, is to move men into more kind of child-rearing, child-caring roles, and to create space for women to not only do that. Okay, so that's one theory. Plec, however, talks about two forms of power that women have over men, by that definition, which derive more directly from traditional definitions of adult male and female roles. And these particular forms have implications which are more compatible with a feminist perspective. These two are... The two forms of power are the expressive power, or the power to express emotions. And the second form is what he calls a masculinity validating power. Okay, I'd like to sing a song about the first one, okay? This is another song that I wrote. It's called No Feelings Blues. The flowers are rotten and the earth is drying. The plants on the windowsill are dying. Leaves on the trees have even stopped trying to hold their position. A lazy malaise, that's the type of description that happily applies to this kind of condition. I've got those, I just won't stay in touch with my feelings blues. Well, the days are so long, I always wish it was later.
one more trip to the refrigerator. My mother comes to mind, and how I hate her lack of affection. My mind keeps dancing in childhood reflection. Logical consequences, future projection. And I've got those, I just won't stay in touch with my feelings blue. Oh, I've got those, I just won't stay in touch with my feelings blue. Won't you help me if you can? I'm feeling down and out of touch, and I do appreciate you being round so very much. I'm thinking of a friend. She's also my lover. How late last night I was lying above her, closing my eyes, trying to cover the hole in my heart. I speak in riddles. I keep the horse before the cart. I talk in similes and circles. I've got it down to an art. And I've got those, just won't stay in touch with my feelings blue. Oh, I've got those, I just won't stay in touch with my feelings blue.
But are there some recognizable things in this song? What's recognizable in this song about concerning expressive power in particular? What do you recognize?
I recognize that frustration with the man that I've been involved with. Both of us being frustrated because they won't just say it, you know, and they say, I can't. Mm-hmm. You know, him wanting to express, but also being afraid of expressing his feelings about it.
Mm-hmm. Have any men been in that situation?
No.
You've always had those feelings readily available. usually leading the charge. Well, I realize that one of the images that I have of this community is, you know, that kind of thing doesn't happen with us. And I keep thinking, well, this isn't very true at Holden. This is more true, you know, out on the outside, maybe in Texas, where the roles are so, seem to be so sharply defined or whatever. So I guess I just need, no, that's not true. It's not true. I'm sorry. What?
Keep going.
I just needed to check, have a reality check.
I was just thinking, I dated a guy for a while that we debated whether feeling, there is such a thing as feelings or not. Hmm. We're so far on the rational side. We had to debate whether or not, this wasn't getting in touch with one's feelings, it was whether or not actually one has feelings.
Yeah.
So he was definitely on the far end of the spectrum.
So his contention was that perhaps feelings didn't exist.
Yeah.
We could get along without them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's your book?
Scott.
Mr. Spock.
Anybody else want to make a comment on this?
When you ran home from school, they gave you holler as soon as you opened the door, Mom, Mom!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mom!
Then you heard her say, yes, I'm here. You said, okay, and out you went.
That's wonderful, yeah.
And out you went. You didn't need it.
Well, right. If it was only that simple. Well, I guess, I feel bold to bring it up because it's still a big issue with me. It feels a very, very familiar impasse to be in a situation either of intensity around a relationship issue and have the invitation come to me, well, what do you feel about this? I mean, I hear you talking a mile a minute about, but, you know, what are you feeling about it? And I sort of go, I don't know what I'm feeling. And that feels devastating in a lot of ways. And for me, that extends then into just walking around the world and feeling like I'm some sort of inferior being, that I have no feelings, that I'm missing half of life, or being not very honest or fooling people. And it's an awful feeling. You know, then that becomes in itself another pressure to have feelings. It's a complex issue. And just to say that men need to express their feelings more is easy to say, but how to go about it is another matter. And I think one of the tricky things about the expressive power that men perceive women having over them, one of the tricky things about it is that men learn to depend on women to help them express. You know, so we come in a very needy way, in some ways, to our relationships with women, or particularly a close relationship with women. That's sort of maybe on the simplest level. It seems like a more complex level then is that a man comes to a woman and basically doesn't acknowledge that he has a need, but somehow gets into some kind of a situation where the woman expresses a lot of feelings, and therefore the man can go away and feel like he has too, because she's expressed it for both of them. Does that make sense? And then it seems like the ultimate sort of bottom level of the whole thing is that men are unable then to feel alive, which is maybe what I was talking about. You walk around feeling like half a human being unless you're in a relationship with a woman. And that's an incredible, incredible burden for women, it seems. If you feel like you kind of depend on your vitality to be near them, it seems like it'd be very hard to have a very... Yeah, I always feel like I take a risk of feeling too individualistic on this whole matter if I say something like, you know, the confidence or the knowledge, whatever, to know that you're in touch with your feelings and to be able to express them has to be in you. And otherwise it gets, I don't know if it's not. And I think that one of the traps for that is men coming to women and receiving some help, but then going away and actually, maybe like you say, it depends on what happens then, actually then feeling some sort of resentment toward the woman for doing that, because she has some kind of power that you don't have, that she may be helping you to get to, but there's kind of a real ambivalent feeling about that. It's like kind of it might be like the mother domination theory. It could be the feeling domination theory or something. You know, women have this power to help us, but then it feels like power over us. So what we do is try to reverse that and take the power back. And I'm not surprised in a lot of instances if there's a kind of imbalance in a relationship that men will not come back easily. And my guess is that the woman will have also some kind of mixed feelings about it. Because if it happens time and time again, it feels like a real lopsided kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Women also learn to read signs, eyes, muscles, get clues into men's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Say what?
Current.
It's
funny, I had this image of this film, Killing It Softly, where there's the man standing looking into the distance and the woman clinging on his arm, looking for those, the flutter of the eyelid, for the twitch in the arm, you know. I mean, that's his communication sort of in this way. It's like, no, he doesn't talk about it, but she talks and says, isn't this the way you feel? Yeah, yeah. And maybe he goes, this is their communication. So whatever sort of seems pleasing is what nods or shakes his head, or the silence is speak a little louder sometimes.
That must be a lot of work.
But you know, it's
self-validating. Yeah,
like if you can do it and then you're sensitive to other people, you can make yourself helpful and even indispensable. Mm-hmm.
So where does the crunch come then? I mean, what's the problem then? In some ways, it seems like the system might work, you know, that it would be okay, but what?
Is that, from my experience, mine needs to be met.
What
mine needs to be met at all. I mean, if I'm constantly doing that for men, what, it's just sort of like they just keep taking. And if I ask, or even express, you know, need, I don't get anything back because I don't know how to teach them how to read my emotions. I only know how to help them read their own. So I'm stuck with myself. So it's real empty.
Also, I've had the experience of men saying that really you haven't given me anything. All this caring, you know, sensitive energy, or I can, if anybody ever loses anything, even in the village, I notice myself doing it. I know where stuff is all the time. You know, I see Jackie's glasses and I remember where they are until she knows where they put my glasses 3 days later. And I just keep track of all that kind of stuff. And people may not want it, they may not need it, they may not realize how much energy it takes. They may consider it an infringement.
Mm-hmm. So what I hear you saying is that a sort of gift or a perception or whatever that you develop to validate yourself, it feels good in some sense. So are you saying, I don't know how much of this I'm hearing or how much I just know when I'm trying out. Is that the way I often feel it happens is that women give me things which I appreciate in some ways, but I don't have much to give back. Or at least what I start feeling. Oh, that's the feeling. I don't have much to give back. I don't have quite what you want.
That may be part of it. But I'm not even always aware that's something I'm giving.
Right.
I think that's really what you're saying. I don't see it necessarily as a gift or an attempt to help another person out.
So, I don't mean to say that in a negative way, but I don't know what you want. It's like, the clearest way to say it would be, as soon as I think I have it, I lose it. That you're happy with me if you can be given out of what you see. But immediately when you start saying, hey, listen, I think I want something out of this, or I want this, or I'm feeling this, or this is something else of me other than this seeing who you are, giving that, helping you with your feelings, then I feel incredibly vulnerable. And that seems to be what women get cheated then, is that in some ways to ask men for anything is dangerous.
I experience it as a little bit that I really enjoy the little things, little signs of attention, you know, even if it's just if someone comes into the room and I'm writing and just, you know, to put their hand on my back, or just little tiny caring things like that that I see myself doing and I see other women doing, you know, it's kind of the standard, it's just what you do, it's what mothers do with their kids, that sort of thing. Okay. And I don't experience it in the sense of wanting a reward, but I find that I don't feel as if I'm being loved if there aren't some of those very small signs of love and care. And so the feeling is that I just don't feel loved.
Or even acknowledged.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you don't exist.
Yeah. John?
This whole subject is a real painful issue for me. It's like one of the things I'm dealing with when I'm here. But I think of the relationship I was just in, and that I would go to Karen to get in touch with my feelings, or her feelings, or to get feelings. And my response, my gift to her was to fix her car, to fix the plumbing, to fix dinner, to do everything that needed to be done. Mm-hmm. But the little things, like Anne just mentioned, were there. So it was this huge miscommunication.
No. Or, yeah. Or it sounds like a huge kind of traditional role setup.
Right.
Yeah. Where both of you were kind of missing the boat.
Just an example. So I was talking, I was remembering a man that I was in a relationship with once. I almost screamed at him because in the midst of this argument about the feelings and stuff, the light bulb turned out. And I went to get a light bulb to put it in, and he insisted on putting it in. I don't need you to put the light bulb.
I need something else.
I can do this myself. And it's just, you know, it never registered. And I wasn't able to, at that point, to understand that it would have been probably under any circumstances. If you put the light bulb in, I'd have been okay. But at that point, that was not what I needed.
I'd like to stop this part of the discussion. It feels like we could get more into it, but I'd like to stop it and kind of just so we can get through the things so at the end I don't have to say, well, we only got through a third of the agenda today, and can we meet again? and I'll skip very quick. I don't even want to say hardly anything about the masculine. The two forms of power that I mentioned, one is expressive power, and the other one is a thing called, what he calls a masculine validating power. Maybe a simple example of that would be what you just said, you know. If he could put the light bulb in some ways, his masculine, you could validate his masculine and say, oh, yes, go ahead and do that. And another one I thought of is, you know, what would football, would there be football or basketball without the cheerleaders? I mean, that's sort of an extreme example, but, you know, would it all be worth it if there wasn't somebody saying, oh, yeah, that's great, man, knock them over and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure it's much more complex than that, but in some sense, I know what that feels like more than I can think of immediate examples. To have women validate my masculinity in sort of just subtle ways. In connection with those two forms of power, I think at least one of the main issues for me, or for the whole structure of that power setup, is that men fear that women will withhold these, what I call, identity-assuring powers. And this leads men to continually have to reassert their power over women, to keep women in those kind of roles of being emotional, of assuring our emotionality, of validating our masculinity. And so if we're going to try to change the situation, I mean, who wants to change it? You know, we've got to give up all these things. So I think that's what that stands in the way of, one of the things that stands in the way of change. And as I already said, in particular, I think, in connection with women, although we've said much more about this here, doing that kind of thing places an incredibly heavy burden on women, which even though women go ahead and do that for the sake of kind of their own identity, being as much as they can given the setup, women don't really want to hold these powers over men. They want some more sense of mutuality. Okay, how to change all this? I just have a couple of suggestions based on my own experience. One is, I thought of when I sang the line of the song from the No Feelings Blues, that there's a little takeoff on the
the Beatles, where it goes, "Won't you help me if you can?" And then I just add, "I'm feeling down and out of touch, and I do appreciate you being around so very much." And the thought that I had in connection with that little interlude was that I feel like I, in the past, have been able to eke that out with women, and that brings women in to kind of help me out. It's kind of a vulnerable, open statement. I think men need to learn how to make that statement with each other. And although I've got a long ways to go with it, to do that in one-to-one situations with men, which I find even more scary than doing it in a group with men. So I'd suggest, you know, the group is an important experience for me, just some sort of just commitment to getting together regularly. And first of all, I suppose you'd have to acknowledge that these things are true. If you don't want to acknowledge that, that's called consciousness raising. And the second is to be willing to work and support each other through those kinds of things. And that's really one of the reasons that I feel like the men's group here at Holton is just really valuable for me and for a lot of others.
It feels chancy, but I think men need to be apart from women to do a lot of that work. I think we need to do that. And I forgot my David Steinberg poem, but he has a wonderful poem about this. And the poem ends something like, you know, does this mean I want to separate myself from women? And the answer is, no, I don't want to separate myself from women, but I do need to do work apart from women. So in men's work, men need to recover the ability to recognize and express emotions apart from women. And secondly, men need to learn how to validate each other so as to decrease reliance on women. I mean, I think men, we validate each other some ways, but I don't know how straightforward it is. Oh, excuse me. but I don't know. This I never have enough heart-to-heart validation in my life. So that's that. Anyway, I'd like to move on to the second part. Which has to do with men's power over women in the context of men's power relationships with other men. Maybe for this part, if we have discussion, we could just have the men talk to start with, okay? This is a thought that came into my head. I don't know. Who knows? Let's lie down. I'll just say some basic things, which we've probably already said 1,000 times here, but one of the difficulties in doing this kind of work, support work with other men, has to do with the complexity of our own power relationships with each other, which in some sense are even more complex, I think, than our power relationships with women. What we know is that men rank themselves according to quote-unquote masculinity. What's masculine, right? Platt gives an interesting, I mean, this is really kind of vivid example in his article about, the one that I thought of was how when you isolate men from women, like in a prison environment, men establish their own sort of hierarchy with each other there. Often they, and it's a very sexualized kind of thing, so some men become the women, become the ones who are available for sex, rape, victimization, that kind of thing. The men, Lord of the Flies, so a lot of that happened in that. And that's, by his definition, that's according to various images of masculinity. What he says is that our society stratifies men, that when you're young, to be masculine is to have physical strength and to have some sort of athletic prowess. And that as you grow older and later in life, it revolves more around things like the ability to make money and how successful you are with women. And that's kind of an in-group thing, you know, as we talk about it. That's how we kind of judge each other. You know, look at Bill and well, let's see, you know, he doesn't
get along real well with women, so it's like, he's down a little notch. And although he's got a pretty nice car, and you know, I see that when the list goes around or something, he's wanting to contribute money for the thing in Nicaragua. And I notice things like this. So I think, he's a little more masculine, that, or he's being successful. You know what I mean? I pick up little things like that. And then we've also talked a little bit about the whole gay-straight kind of thing. The straighter you are, the more masculine you are. Any sort of tendencies to be gay, and that applies to vulnerable, sharing feelings, kind of falling apart, being womanly in any sense, is to be less than masculine, is to be lower on the strata. I wrote down here because I like rhymes. The worst fear is to be thought a queer. So. You see. Let me just say four things about the relationship between masculine ranking and men's power over women. First of all, women are seen as symbols of success in men's competition with each other. So it's symbols of success. I don't know, that's one that I feel funny about, because I'm not conscious of that in my own behavior at the moment. It feels like, in some ways, I'm free of that. And then it feels to me like in this community we're free of that. You know, it's something that happens somewhere else. But I recognize maybe the fact that I don't feel it winning it. But it's, I don't know, we could talk about that.
What does it say?
Women are symbols of success in men's competition with each other.
Meaning, so, he may not have a very good job, but he sure got a pretty wife.
Right. That's right, yeah. Or we get together and we talk, you know, about our sexual experiences, and you know, the more and the better looking, the better. And not only now, but in the past too. Building on that. Second area, in the relationship between masculine ranking and men's domination over women. Is that women play a mediating role in the competitive struggle among men. And what we mean by that is that women have a way of getting men together and facilitating some sort of safety amongst them. Do you know what I mean by that? Do I have to say more? He makes a nice phrase, they act as the social lubrication between men.
Good comment on that. I've lived in many different multi-single person households, and the male households have been terrible, all male households, and the ones that are mixed, everything just went smooth, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Part of a performance thing, you think?
No, I think it's more of a matter of the sensitivity towards the women in the household, that everything seems to be spoken. And things don't get underneath your skin and burn if that's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So the women act as facilitators.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's been obvious in being in the male profession, the clergy, where at least until like the last two or three years, every time you met, it was on the man. You could sense that. Competing, and it was a funny type of competition. It was like things like church membership, church programming, church success.
Do you sense, could you describe how that changes then when a woman comes into it?
I haven't had enough
to do it, yeah.
Since
yeah. Right. Yeah. So people recognize that. Do you recognize that?
I think women, the presence of women reduce the, perhaps isn't the right word, the vulgarity of men. So you get a group of guys together and start talking dirty and start cussing them, you know, and it seems like a bad sign, not necessarily just men, but of human nature comes out when a group of men get together. Not always, but that's a general way. You know, and women are present, well, you clean up your act, mm-hmm. or something, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's in traditional terms, but that's a lot of times the way it works. Mm-hmm. You know, the facilitating force of the jhanas.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it seems like a lot of the stuff we talk about with the vulgarity, the sports, has to do with competition, sexuality, competition and sexuality. Who can tell the dirtiest story? You know, make the crudest joke or talk most offhandedly, I think, about women.
Yeah, I remember I got that message loud and clear at a very early age, you know, just observing like when I was, if I go with my dad to his place of work, which were fruit warehouses, and you go into some of the offices and you visit with the men that you dealt with. And I learned very early that there was a whole different way of acting, a whole different language that you use. And I always, shouldn't say struck me as curious, but it was a fascinating thing at a young age. There was two different, because a lot of the men who deal with the business, say some of them were in their church group too. That was a distinct social situation we always had, and there was a totally different set of conduct. I mean,
it's the whole locker room thing, right?
Yeah.
That, it really bothers me in a way. It's happened to me outside of Holden, but it's also happened to me, you know, working there every day, and they say, oh, there's a lady present, or whatever. And it's like, I want to say, okay, so that's a real you. If that's the way you really talk, why are you changing that?
But I'm not so sure it's like that's the way they really are, so much as that's as much as facade or something.
But then yeah. I wonder, because they're obviously, you know, say 50% of the time they're not.
I'm just curious how many other guys feel compelled to participate in that, you know, when you're around guys that are sort of chewing and spitting and, you know, talking about the women they've known and stuff, you know, and you're doing sort of, you think, well, this isn't my thing, but like you said, you saw at a very early age and learned to communicate that way with them somehow. You know.
I think it's really an unconscious thing for me. I mean, you just kind of get drawn in, you know. I think one of the ways for me is when my language starts to say words, slang words that I don't like and I don't want myself to be saying, but it just comes out. I think there's more than once I walked away from a situation and felt, hey, why were you talking like that? Mm-hmm. You know, why were you thinking those things? It's just you sit and kick yourself as you walk away, but then you do it over and over.
Yeah, in the situation I was talking about, I always got the impression that my dad, when he would slip into that, you know, the dirty jokes, the occasional, you know, vulgar words, I got the impression that was the facade for him. Just a feeling.
Isn't that the difficult part of it, though? All, you don't know exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, this just brings up direction. I was at a campus ministry, Lutheran Campus Ministry staff conference a year and a half ago, and I mean, I was a guest, you know, song leader at the thing, and I'd spent 3 days with these people, and then one night we had a night off and went downtown. We're driving down in the car. There were seven men in the car, and they went into this incredible stuff. I couldn't believe this was the same people and everything, and I think. Because I didn't know them that well, for one thing, but also just because I will not participate in that stuff. Well, not only will I not, but it's not me to do it anymore, if it ever was quite. But it not only felt awful, like isolating, not to be able to be a part of the group doing it, but it felt awful not to do it in the other sense. I mean, I thought, like, who do they think I am? You know, I was being quiet like you, Jeff. I walked away in a way. I actually, we went out and ate together and it continued, and I started sweating. I mean, just getting nervous because I was being so silent, and I didn't know how to just say, gee, I feel really mad. I mean, I was getting furious inside, and afterwards I got sick. I rode home on the bus by myself, and I guess what I'm saying, what
is that it's hard not to be a part of it too, in a way.
Well, you want to be involved in the social scene, that is, at that particular point. I mean, you don't want to be an outcast, but you know, it's a terrible conflict because you know this is not you, or that's not the way you want to act or think or talk or whatever it happens to be. But yet that happened, that's the social scene at that point, you know. Yeah. If you're also just getting to know these people, you don't want to, mm-hmm. you know, put yourself on the outside, or, you know, think like I'm above, you know, the things that they talk about or something like that. You don't want to give them that impression, but then you don't want to be involved. So where
it is, it's great, very complex.
It's rocking a hard place.
It's one of those, I just, to put it in sort of heady terms, it's one of those complexities about the what's going on there that's competitive, or something must be going on to make it.
In our past district, I know the clerk here was on, maybe we only met once a week, four of us usually made a pact to never laugh, never smile, mm-hmm. and never respond to sexist or women appreciating. Can just four people doing that change the whole, wasn't
any
fun anymore.
Yeah.
We put our heads down.
Yeah. Solidarity.
Well, there's something that would say we just kind of look at the person and put our heads down in silence. You know, without, it wasn't a direct, but we never confronted the same. Mm-hmm.
But it is, it's confronting ended, just to do that, though.
It ended.
Yeah. The next day, somebody from that group did come up to me and say, you know, we felt really bad when you left. And he and I then became close on it, because I could say, you know, I felt really bad leaving, but I just, you can sort it out. I'd like to move on to a couple. It's 4:00, and I'd just like to say these other things and then sing the song and quit. The relationship between masculine ranking and women and men's domination over women also manifests itself in that women are become a refuge for the dangers and stresses of relating to other men. It's a dangerous world out there with men. And one of the things I think that we rely on women is a place where we can go and feel safe. We can feel away from that. We can spill our beans about, or not even spill the beans about, not have to talk about it. It just feels like a safe place to be. It's a place where we can go and we can express our needs. Men can express needs with women that we cannot express with each other out in the cutthroat world, or even just in that bantering world. You know, we're not really talking about our needs, what we need. We don't have to be talking about our needs all the time, but it's nice to be able to do it. And fourthly, this one really strikes me too, is that it's more of a political or social analysis thing, but that women serve as an underclass to reduce the stress of competition among males. And I think what one way to say that would be that it's like, even in this competitive struggle with other males, if you don't feel like you're up there and you're down here, even if you feel like you're at this level, you know there's many more below you, all the women. And I think that's one thing, one of the reasons that women's liberation becomes so threatening, and moving women into more equal roles, because then you can sink lower than women.
Kind of thing. It's interesting, in one of his songs, John Lennon said, "Woman is the nigger of the world."
Mm-hmm. Brick and wood, mortar and plane, labor's love, a little faith. We can see the structure taking form. Ancient tools, a new design, taken care, taken time. We've seen so many houses fall before. We are building a house, growing tall before our eyes. Stone on stone, watch it rise. We are building a house with our hands, with our songs,
may it last as long as our lives. As we tinker with the plans, gentle friends lend their hands, laying down a sturdy hardwood floor. For the future, from the past, room to change, built to last. We've seen so many houses fall before. We are building a house, growing tall before our eyes. Stone on stone, watch it rise. We are building a house, with our hands, with our songs. May it last as long as our lives. And sometimes you'll need a vacation, I'll need one too. Sunning in the sand, running in the pouring rain. And after the recreation, we will sleep in our own bed once again. That easy chair you used to know, photographs from long ago, Thanksgiving Day parade moving in, so many books upon the shelves, so much more to teach ourselves. Under this roof we shall begin. We are building a house, growing tall before our eyes. Stone on stone, watch it rise. We are building a house, with our hands, with our songs. May it last as long as our lives. May it last as long as our lives.